This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We owe you some thoughts on a trade the Nationals just made this afternoon. We'll give those to you in about 15 minutes. Right here on Grant and Danny. Welcome back. You're locked into the Fan. Earl Forsey's keeping you abreast of everything going on in sports every half hour, and he's giving you a chance at the top of each hour to win $1,000 in the Cash Flash contest. Your next opportunity comes up at the end of our show at 2:02 or so, so make sure you are listening at that time. Our buddy Andy Benoit does an unbelievable job breaking down the film and analyzing football for MMQB and SI. And he was one of the few guests we had on that agreed with us before the season, while everyone was singing the praises of Alex Smith, that maybe, just maybe, this wasn't a match made in heaven. And after six consecutive poor quarters and a game that everybody saw on Monday night go poorly, we wanted to have Andy back on to get a progress report here at the quarter poll. Andy, it's Grant and Danny in D.C. Thanks for the time. So let's just start with that. Smith-Gruden marriage, you were nervous. Maybe refresh people on why, and how do you feel so far?
Yeah, what made me nervous about it is Gruden's system is very timing and rhythm based, and it demands an aggressiveness from the quarterback. And Kirk Cousins, it was always a fine line to walk with him because at times he could be too aggressive, especially when he had to go out of structure. But within structure, within the way the plays are designed, a quarterback has to be willing to throw at not tight windows, but very defined windows at a very defined moment. And Alex Smith has never been that kind of a timing and rhythm passer. He's always been a see-it-and-then-throw-it passer. And the Chiefs, over the years, did a very nice job of building offensive designs accordingly to accommodate that. But that's not what Gruden's system does. So I didn't know if – I was concerned that Gruden's going to get frustrated with Smith leaving throws on the field, playing off schedule a little bit. Now, to be fair, there have been up and down results. I'm describing only the down possibilities, but Alex Smith against Green Bay was sensational at pulling the trigger and making tight throws and having the gunslinger mentality, and we saw the results. But there have been a lot of games this year where Alex Smith is what he is. He's going to be a little bit of a dink and dunk passer. I think the silver lining, though, guys, is the Redskins do have the personnel to win with some of that dinking and dunking. I know they didn't do it the other night, but Chris Thompson, Jordan Reed, Vernon Davis, these are all Jamison Crowder. These are all middle of the field, underneath, over the ball receivers, and that plays well to Smith's strength. So I'm cautiously more optimistic than I was before, but overall I'm still pessimistic.
Andy, we were in New Orleans for this game on Monday night, and it wasn't that much fun if you're a Redskins fan, but I had an end zone seat, so I felt like I was sitting down watching the All-22 as just a rube who doesn't, you know football the way that you and some other guys do, and I noticed a couple times receivers running open. It wasn't that often because it seemed like the Saints had a pretty good design going, but a couple times receivers were open. Either Smith missed them, or he just decided I'm gonna throw it laterally, you know, for a potential 2-yard gain, passing up avenues for advancement. Is that what your film study has kind of led you to see, that there are opportunities that he's not taking?
Well, I'll be fair. I haven't seen the film of that game, the All-22 film of the game yet for Monday night. But over the years, that would be consistent with what you see from Alex Smith. There will never be and I know he's got no interceptions and his rating's good and all that stuff. There's never a stat that will ever capture throws that aren't attempted that should be attempted. And next to interceptions, those throws left on the field, those are the biggest problem a passing game can have from its quarterback. So you've seen that over the years with Smith. Again, he's a cautious guy. The other thing is, when you disrupt his pocket, he breaks himself down. So like Tom Brady, for example, let's take the best illustration we can think of. When his pocket gets messy, he steps and slides within the pocket, and he remains a passer. He doesn't relocate the ball. It's up near his chest still. He's ready to throw at any moment. Drew Brees, who we saw Monday night, he's another guy like that. When Alex Smith moves within the pocket, he goes from passer to runner. His feet change. He does not stay in the throwing stance. He brings the ball down. His eyes come down to the pass rush. It's interesting because he's not a scrambling quarterback per se. He's mobile enough, but he has the mentality in the pocket of a scrambling quarterback, and that's always been problematic too.
Our guest is Andy Benoit on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. And you're right. When he and this offense have been humming, it's looked very pretty, and that's the first half of Arizona and the first half of Green Bay. But basically, it's those two halves in four games and eight halves to this point. Would you, if you're Jay Gruden, would you tweak or change anything to help maybe the Smith or the passing game? One issue that people have had to this point as an example is the lack of involvement of Jordan Reed, two targets, one catch last week. Jamison Crowder on pace for career lows in catches and yards. They just aren't getting the same opportunities they were getting before.
Yeah, and I think ultimately your offense takes the shape of your quarterback. So they're going to tweak stuff for Smith just because that's how they're going to play. And those guys need to be getting the ball more, and there are ways to get those guys the ball on defined throws. I mean, those are great inside route runners, slant runners, so they're often facing linebackers on first and second down when defenses are in zone coverage. There are solutions to that, and those solutions are conducive with the way Smith typically plays.
Okay. So, Andy, going forward, is there something that you think is like fixable? Do you think what can improve here? Because my alarm is basically that Reed and Crowder, their two best playmakers on the inside, are not getting near enough chances and looks. What do you think is going to be better and maybe even sustainable as the season goes forward, talking about Smith and this offense?
Yeah, I think what we have to remember, and it gets overlooked because over the years, the Redskins' rushing numbers have been befuddlingly low at times. But this is one of the best offensive lines in football. They are great at right guard. They are really great at left tackle. I think they're better than people realize at center, and they're better than a lot of teams at right tackle. And I don't think they're bad at left guard either. I mean, it's a good offensive line. So in theory, they should be able to have a run-oriented offense with a passing game that comes off of their running game, which is how Gruden's played over the years. I think the better they get at running the ball, and maybe even as the more creative they get with some of that, I'm not saying they're not creative now, but just you can't have your offense run through Alex Smith. He's a facilitating quarterback. He's not the drop back gunslinging quarterback. And if you're going to have an offense run around him or have him be a part of it, then the running game has to be better for the Redskins than it has been over recent years. And it should be better with that offensive line.
The Rams and the Chiefs right now seem to do it a little bit different and a little bit better than everyone else when you're looking at all the pre-snap motion, you know, throwing on first down, really being ahead of the curve when it comes to, you know, play calling and design. Who else would you put in that category as having a really strong season with Sean McVay and Andy Reid offensively?
That's a good question. I was hoping you weren't asking that because I was going to just start listing all the great things those guys are doing. That's much easier than to try to say who's even near them in their class. Those guys are pretty far ahead of people right now.
I'll take that because, yeah, I like the jet action, the handoffs to the receivers at full speed. I mean, you can see the similarities between those two offenses, but what are they doing that is so unique and different than everybody else?
Yeah, it's the jet action with the Rams is the biggest tactic in the NFL right now that nobody's talking about. And I don't even know if people within the league are talking about it. Their opponents certainly are because their opponents don't have an answer for it. The problem with the jet action is it alters at a very quick rate on the fly. It alters the gap responsibilities of all the linebackers. And what McVay has realized is if we can get them in that mindset of, hey, I'm changing my gap rule here, everybody's got to be changing with me, we can build passing plays off of that exploit that. We can attack the run defenders through the air. It's really, in a lot of ways, it's very similar to the theory of that's behind play action and what they do. And a lot of times they run play action with the jet action. And I just saw, watching Rams film here as you called, guys, I just saw Bobby Wagner get killed on an over route with that whole combination there. So, it's highly unique. And what Kansas City's doing a lot of times, they'll put four receivers after the snap. They'll do it pre-snap as well, but after the snap, they're putting four receivers to one side of the field and just one receiver to the other side. So a super unbalanced route distribution, and almost every zone coverage right now, with the way they're constructed and taught, they don't have an answer for four receivers to a side of the field. They're built to defend three receivers over there.
Andy, awesome with us as always. Really appreciate the information. You're so informed. We get smarter when you come on. Let's talk again soon.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
See you, buddy.
Check out Andy Benoit's work in SI and, of course, on the MMQB.com. Where Grant and Danny, the Nationals, made a trade for
a
quality veteran reliever today. We'll tell you who's coming to D.C. and what we think about that swap next on The Fan.
Guys, Danny Ruye from my pals at Ted Britt Ford. Do it. Do it. Make this play. I have done it a couple times over. Back in 2016, the wife and I were shopping around. We think, hey, we got a little one. We need a slightly bigger car than we've been driving. Let's see what we can get done here. And we shopped around. We fell in love with the Ford Edge after a couple test drives with Ted Britt Ford. We were in and out super quick. We loved the car. We loved the experience. So then it was my turn to get a car again. I said, you know what? I had such a great experience at Ted Britt Ford. I'm going to go back. And that's exactly what I did. Went back to Ted Britt Ford. And I drive myself a 2017 Fusion. Oh, do I love that car? The answer is yes. It's awesome. You can get a Fusion. 2018 Fusion for as little as $199 a month. That's a lease deal, baby. Get that Edge I mentioned. I got a 2018 Edge, just $259 a month. How about the 2018 F-150? $5,000 off the MSRP plus 0% financing. How about or $2,000 cash, $2,000 in rebates, and that 0% APR for 60 months. These are choices. You can make them at Ted Britt Ford. Fairfax Chantilly. Click away at TedBritt.com. Go tell them Danny sent you.
Dante Stallworth will join us. Bottom of the hour, 12 minutes out. Stallworth played with Drew Brees.
Drew Brees.
Drew Beasy.
Belly good quarterback, New Orleans.
We had a waitress in New Orleans named Breezy at one point.
We had a Breezy?
Me and Allison, one of our buddies, did.
Oh.
We went to breakfast at Stanley in honor of the Stanley Cup.
Stanley.
Right in Jackson Square, and our waitress's name was Breezy.
How about it?
Yeah. Not Beasy, though. But Stallworth on the record being broken by Breeze coming up at 1:30. Campbell's been waiting very patiently in Gaithersburg. Why don't we squeeze Campbell in before we talk about a big trade for the Nats today? What's up, Campbell?
Hey, Campbell.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Come in.
Hey, so I got an idea. So Eric Flowers just got released by the Giants, and why don't we sign Eric Flowers as our swing tackle and move Ty Nesecki to left guard, which has been a gaping hole on our offensive line. Or, I don't know, since Sean LaValle got signed.
Well, I would move him to left guard just to see if he could play there anyway. I don't know that Eric Flowers has anything to do with that, though, necessarily. I think he's terrible. Every time I watch Eric Flowers, he's just basically turning around and watching a defensive lineman that just blew past the offensive line hit his quarterback. But I actually am with you on the idea of seeing what would happen if you kicked Ruye back over to a center position and played Nesecki at guard.
So a couple things on it. I'm more than willing to give Eric Flowers a flyer, by the way. Former first-round pick.
You're paying him nothing. Who cares?
Yeah,
I mean, why not?
Pick him up and let me see. Let me see if my guys can get a hold of him and give him a change of scenery. The other part with Nesecki, though, is remember when we saw him briefly, he didn't play tremendously well in action. Was it against Green Bay, I guess? Whatever it was. We had like three holding penalties and didn't look awesome. I wonder if the bloom may be off that rose. It's just kind of something I'm spitballing here. It's a small, limited sample. But remember, he was viewed as, wow, what a find, what a savior. And he's kind of dining out on that still from a couple seasons ago, right? I don't think
he was particularly
good last year. And the small sample this year, he wasn't kind of changing
things.
Well,
where he's struggled most is at right tackle for Morgan Moses more than at left tackle for Trent Williams. For whatever reason, left tackle supposedly the more difficult position to play. He's been much better at left tackle than right tackle. But Nesecki's 32 years old. And so it could also be a situation where, maybe a 3 years ago when people thought this guy's something. Scott McClellan was saying he's one of the top half of the league tackles in football, and he played like it when he got his chance for Trent Williams. Maybe you're right, and that was then, and this is now, and he's a different guy. But I would still kick the tires because I don't think that highly of Tony Bergstrom. I don't think that highly of Sean LaValle that I am above seeing what Nesecki, whose upside over the last couple years has been higher than either of those guys, seeing what he looks like next to Trent Williams. I'd be fine with that. Until they consistently run the ball and protect the quarterback.
I'll try something else.
Neither of which they did 2 days ago in New Orleans.
Yeah.
I'm open to suggestions and ideas. No one right now in this operation really is above reproach. They don't have a single guy right now that you definitely would say absolutely is going to make the Pro Bowl, right? I mean, who on this team right now is an unequivocal Pro Bowler? We're a quarter way through the year. Not their quarterback. Not their running back. He's been good twice and done nothing twice. They don't have a wide receiver in the conversation.
I think that's...
Jordan Reed might be their best player.
Dude, that's telling.
Ineffective.
Because you're right.
Jamison Crowder may or may not have played in a couple of their games.
I mean, if you end up with a certain number of sacks from the interior, an Allen or a Payne, but nobody's surefire
at
this
point.
You know what I mean?
Allen has played at a Pro Bowl level. I don't know that he would make it just because I don't know if he'll get the consideration. But yeah, he's at least played at that level. The trade that the Nationals made very quickly, they gave up bonus money. And they went and got Kyle Bearclaw. Now, his name, Charlie and Dave style, he's spelling with the bell here, is spelled funny. It's B-A-R-R-A-C-L-O-U-G-H, Bearclaw.
Ding.
But forgetting his name for a moment, which is wacky and annoying to say and more annoying to read, he's been very effective over the last few seasons. Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you, Thomas.
A 25-game sample to make his major league debut in 2015. He pitched to a 154 average. In 2016, he became a household name and a National League All-Star type reliever, pitched in almost half their games. The last two seasons, he's pitched in an average of 64 games. He strikes out over a batter per inning, generally for the Marlins, which is, shows some stuff. He throws about 94 miles an hour. His career average against is 193. He is a really good Major League reliever. So basically, the Nats gave up some money that big pitcher in the next year or two isn't going to matter a whole lot, and upgraded a bullpen that with Kelvin Herrera's injury, Madsen having been dealt, was a free agent. A lot of questions about what they're going to do in the back end. You now have your setup man ahead of Sean Doolittle for the eighth inning.
So they wanted him to take over as closer in Miami or Florida, whatever we're calling him. He struggled with that a little bit, but he has been an effective reliever, which is why they viewed him, as a closer-type figure. And I remember a couple years ago on a broadcast where he was just dealing. Upper 90s, pretty sharp breaking ball. FP said the same thing that I thought at that moment. He's going to be a closer someday. Now, whether that works out or not, he's 28. Maybe the book is written on him. But in a medium leverage type role, you could do a lot worse is what I would say. So a sixth inning arm for a competitive team, yeah, deal me in on Kyle Bearclaw for very little extra bonus pool money that I believe the Nationals acquired in some of their wheelings and dealings before the end of the season after the original trade deadline.
I don't think he's a sixth inning arm. I think he's going to pitch in the eighth inning. I really believe he sets up for Doolittle. Now, maybe they go do a couple of other things. I don't know what the future holds for a guy like Greg Holland, as an example, who maybe could turn into a setup man. I mean, you're not that far removed from him being a disaster for the Cardinals, but he pitched well here down the stretch this past season. But Doolittle pitches the ninth. Herrera is out. Kota Glover I can trust as far as I can throw him. I believe that when I see it.
In terms of availability.
And everything else.
And everything else?
He was just okay. I mean, did Kota Glover blow your skirt up this year? I thought he was fine. He pitched 21 times, 16 innings. He had 9 strikeouts in 16 innings.
That few?
Yeah,
that
he didn't miss bats or anything like that. But, you know, if he's pitching in the 6th or 7th inning, I'm cool with that. Justin Miller, that was fun. I enjoyed that. I mean, if he's back in the middle inning, 6th, 7th inning, I'm cool with that. I don't want him pitching in the 8th or the 9th inning at any point this year. I think that would be unfortunate. Tim Collins, Matt Grace, again, those are depth guys, kind of middle, underbelly type relievers. Wander Suero, I actually like a whole lot. I saw plenty of Jimmy Gordero. I'm pretty good on that for now. So one guy to keep an eye on is Austin Williams. I think will help them a lot this coming season. But I think right now it's Bearclaw and Doolittle in the 8th and the 9th, and you're hoping for 7 innings from your starter. But you could do, as far as I'm concerned, I think he's a top 10 setup man probably certainly in the National League, maybe in baseball, based on his 3-year track record. He's that good. I love the trade. I'm smart. I think it was smart by Mike Rizzo. And I think, for me, I'm surprised, I guess is the word I'm looking for, that the Marlins would give him up for what they did. But then again, they just handed Christian Yelich over for no reason.
Sure, they just walked the MVP up to Milwaukee to make sure that they got to go to an NLCS.
Wow, that was wacky.
Yeah, thanks again for that, by the way. So here's the reason I like it the most. Arbitration eligible for another 3 years.
Is it 3 years of control for him?
I believe it's till 2021.
Damn.
Dirt cheap in that way. So his salary will be 1-2.
By the way, trade with the Marlins more.
Yeah, seriously. Just keep calling them.
They just give up talent for less than they should all the time.
So think about the role that he's going to occupy. It's the role they signed maybe Sean Kelly to have a couple years ago, and that cost 10 times this amount, basically. So he's a guy that, you know, you feel good about running out there, as you said, whether it's a seventh inning arm that gets someone else to pitch in a setup role or he's the setup guy. You could do a lot worse. And it's for not very much. That, to me, is exciting. And again, they need a few of these. They need effective pieces that don't cost them a lot with some of the salary obligations that may be facing them over the next couple seasons. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. You kind of know who I'm talking about here. Be they Turner, be they Rendon, or, of course, this offseason, be it Harper. And if it's not Harper, who is it? You're going to go get somebody else that's high-priced? Having effective pieces at this kind of cost that Mike Rizzo loves, the Adam Eatons of the world, the Albert Claws of the world, he loves having those guys as assets to offset some of maybe their big money internal signings or external.
Dante Stallworth played with the Redskins. Really good guy we love having on the show. Stallworth played with Drew Brees in New Orleans before coming to Washington. He had some things to say on social media about Brees breaking the all-time passing record. He'll join us next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
On the 38 in Orland, moving right to left in the gun, three. First down and 10, shotgun snap, drops back, looks long, far side. He's got a wide open receiver. It's caught at the 35, breaking the tackle, 30 from the 20 down the sideline, the 10, the 5, and it's a touchdown for Tre'Quan Smith. Over the shoulder catch, 62 yards, and the record. Brees has done it. With a standing ovation from over 74,000. The time is 8:34 Central Time at the Superdome in New Orleans. And Drew Brees has just become professional football's all-time leading passer.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Drew Brees is an all-time record holder for passing yards. And he did it against the Redskins. That's the disappointing part. But kudos to Drew Brees on a legendary and epic and a wonderful career. Great offense, great scheme, accurate passer who's put up monster numbers. He's a Super Bowl champion, and he's gunning for a second ring. One of his former teammates, Dante Stallworth, is a guy we love having on the show. Played here in Washington, longtime NFL wide receiver, is on the Mattress Warehouse hotline. Dante, I saw you tweeting about Drew Brees and about basically going through something very similar with him many years ago when your careers were at crossroads. I wonder if you could explain to our listeners, you know, kind of how your career paths were so similar at that time and how he's done since.
Yeah, so it was interesting. I think pretty much everyone had seen what happened to Drew, and it sucked because it was his contract season. And he was, you know, I don't know how many people would dive in there. Under any quarterbacks, really, the coaches tell you not to do it. They pretty much tell you don't put yourself in harm's way, basically, unless it's absolutely necessary. And this game they were playing, I don't remember if it was for them to win or lose to make it to the playoffs, but they were either on the verge or they were already out of the playoffs. And this dude's playing like it's his last game of his career. And he goes out and, like I said, he tries to dive on a fumble and dislocates his shoulder and completely rips his labrum and rotator both, I believe. And so it's a pretty dramatic and horrific injury to a quarterback for his throwing arm. Any arm, really, but for any position, but especially a quarterback in his throwing arm. And we both had surgery by Dr. Andrews in Birmingham, which is, you know, he does a lot of the lower body work. And I was there. I had the 300-pound guy land on me early in the year on a reverse, which I hated those, and got slammed for it. And I only had an arthroscopic surgery on my labrum and my rotator. And so we were both there rehabbing in Birmingham, Alabama, and we would talk, you know, every time we would see each other. And I think it's natural for wide receivers and quarterbacks to talk, but I had known, you know, again, about his injury and was hoping that he would have a chance to get back. I knew it was between New Orleans and Miami. And I know that, you know, at the time we were just coming off of Katrina and we were, you know, we were 3-13 the year before. We hadn't made the playoffs since I had been there. So New Orleans didn't look too attractive to most people, let alone, you know, Sean Payton's first year there coming over as a head coach after that. And so when we hired Sean Payton, and I had known about his offense because I, you know, good friends with Jason Witten and watched Jason Witten's offense and the Cowboys, and I talked to Jason Witten and was able to see that playbook. And I told Drew when we're sitting there rehabbing, and Drew tells me, actually, he says, "Hey, I talked to your boy the other day," and I'm thinking, who is he talking about? So he says, I asked him, who are you talking about? He said, Sean Payton. And I was like, oh man, like I immediately got excited, you know, like thinking about what I had talked about with Witten and thinking about other things and, you know, what Drew could possibly, you know, do with this offense. And I got excited, and he was very like calm, and he said to me, which is really interesting. He said to me, yeah, you know, I like Sean, man. He's like, and I know the offense is going to be nice. And he was like, you know, and I know that the city is down right now. And he's like, you know, if I come on board, man, you know, we got to do some good things for the city. They could use a winner right now. And he immediately, like, I saw the leadership, and he wasn't trying to, you know, it wasn't like, hey, you know, I'm taking the reins if I come there, that kind of a conversation. It was more of like, hey, let's work together. And, you know, and we're all on the same mission. But you know, we've got our hands full both on and off the field. I was in New Orleans already. I had been there. I was drafted there. And to hear that from him, number one, I think really struck a chord with me to see how concerned he was. You know, not just about his own injury. He never mentioned that. He just was in there busting his tail every day, but he was more concerned about, bringing a winner to the city of New Orleans after what had happened. And so that meant a lot to me, because I went through Katrina on that team, you know, with the city, and being able to, you know, be there and see the devastation firsthand. And so that meant a lot to me. But then he really blew my mind when he started reeling off my stats and reeling off our depth chart and clarifying if this guy was a free agent or if this guy was a restricted free agent next year. And I'm just like, dude, who are you, dude? I'm like, who are you? Like, it just completely blew my mind that he knew all of that. But, you know, as time went on and I got to see him, and, you know, just in practice and how he operated every day at work, it became apparent to me that this dude was just on another level. And I appreciated that in him. And, you know, it's great to see him doing well and, you know, great family, and his kids are getting big. So it's, you know, I'm very happy for Drew. I couldn't be more happier for him in the city of New Orleans.
It's a great perspective from Dante Stallworth here on Grant and Danny. Dante, before Drew Brees kind of took off in New Orleans, it was, oh, Drew Brees, good quarterback, right? Couple of nice years in San Diego.
Yeah.
First couple of years, it was sort of regular good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to get into, whether it was like year three or four, then all of a sudden it was the 5,000 yards, mid-30 touchdowns, kind of the, oh my God, this offense is unbelievable type moment, right? So it was rolling, it was pretty good, but then it turned elite and incredible, and now it's the Hall of Fame type stuff. What was that change in your mind? What was it, was it unlocking Drew? Was it him and Peyton getting on the same page? What in your mind kind of led to that renaissance?
You know, one of the things that I've played for a number of teams over a number of years in the NFL, one of the things that I've seen for offenses to be effective as the Saints have been, the quarterback and the play caller, whether he's the head coach or the play caller in general, whoever that is, they've got to be one in the same mind. And, you know, just getting the playbook from Sean Payton, when this is our first conversation, and he's like, hey, do you have a playbook? And I'm like, no. I was like, let me get it. And he's like, cool. He's like, you're going to love this offense. Not that JV stuff, that arena football you guys were running last year. And so just seeing that playbook, it just looked like a bunch of Madden plays. You know what I mean? And like, as a wide receiver, you like love to see all these different routes and route concepts. And And again, you know, Drew wasn't even 100% going into the season. He had just only started throwing, I guess what you would consider full time during training camp. And even then he was still kind of backed off. Like, I believe he didn't do 2-a-days at first, if I'm not mistaken. And the fact that him and Sean Payton had been on the same page, you know, I've seen what great offenses can do when you have a play caller and a quarterback on the same page. I mean, you look at our boy Sean McVay and what he's doing with Jared Goff, man. I mean, that's, you know, not to put him on the level of Drew Brees, but just the efficiency of that offense and how they operate and the kids playing exceptionally well, you know, and it helps to have a play caller that not only is innovative and can, you know, move the pieces around. So it's pretty much, you know, it's never the same offense, never the same concepts, and the quarterbacks don't get bored, you know, with different ways to beat the defenses. And I, you know, again, Sean Payton and Drew Brees being on the same page, I think that's been the biggest catalyst for their success.
Dante Stallworth, Grant and Danny. We only got about a minute left here, Dante, but I want to actually get kind of a broad NFL question out there for you. Seems like you were a few years too early, man, because it's never been easier to get open and to move the ball through the air than right now. What's it like watching the game as a wide receiver?
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, but you know, there were guys that I talked to all the time, and like Andre Reed, you know, he's one of my guys, and he never brings it up a lot, but we talk about it all the time. We're like, dude, like those guys could wrestle you down with, you know, and back in those days, and we had it much better. So, you know, as the game gets older and longer, they, you know, obviously they want to see the quarterbacks protected, and they want to see which essentially them protected so they can put up points, and they want to see points being scored. No one wants to watch a 9-6 field goal kicking defensive game, except defensive coaches and defensive players. But the NFL is gearing up more and more. And even, like I said, even today, you know, with the new rules against the quarterback, I get there's no one that is more pro safety for players than I am, but it just gets to a point where, you know, it's not even fair for the defense. And I've said this for a number of times, even my first year, I think there was only one rule from my first year to the end of my career, there was only 10 years. There was only one rule that was implemented for the defensive backs for the secondary, and that was the push-out rule. Because up to then, a wide receiver could get one foot down, and if he gets pushed out, you know, then the referee would have to make a judgment call, or pretty much just gave it to us and said, you know, yeah, he would be able to do that. You see, the Vikings won a huge game about 15 years ago with a situation like that. So it sucks for the defense, man. You saw Richard Sherman talk about it recently, but I mean, you know, that we can either complain, or when we go on strike, we can try to change. We, the former players can try to change, you know, some of the terms of the new agreement, because I think this is going to be, you know, when the new negotiations come up in a few years, it's going to get pretty ugly, I believe.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I think so too. Dante, this was great, man. Appreciate the time. Let's talk soon.
Thanks for having me, fellas. Appreciate it.
Always love having Dante Stallworth on the show, and who better to give perspective on Drew Brees and Sean Payton than a guy that was there when that unity began. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. Next, an update on Jimmy Butler. Still a chance he could be traded. Plus, we'll get you ready for the Caps taking on their friends from the West, the Vegas Golden Knights. Last time they played Vegas, they were hoisting a Stanley Cup. That game is tonight at Capital One Arena.
That was a game the Capitals won. Here's one that you can't win, talking games. Credit card debt. They'll include this little breakdown, and it shows you how paying only the minimum payments means you'll be paying off that debt for decades. That's right, your debt, decades. Lending Club, you can consolidate your debt to pay off credit cards with one fixed monthly payment. Since 2007, Lending Club has helped millions of people regain control of their finances with affordable, fixed-rate personal loans. No trips to a bank, no high-interest credit cards. Just go to LendingClub.com, tell them about yourself and how much you want to borrow, pick the terms that are right for you, and if you're approved, your loan is automatically deposited, how about this, right into your bank account in as little as a few days. LendingClub is the number one peer-to-peer lending platform with over $35 billion in loans issued. Here's your ask. Here's what you got to do. Just go to LendingClub.com/Danny. Check your rate in minutes, and you can borrow up to $40,000. That's LendingClub.com/Danny. LendingClub.com/Danny. All loans made by WebBank. Member FDIC.
It's time to figure out who's going home, who's getting voted off the island on Redskins Survivor. Final few minutes of Grant and Danny. Normally on Tuesdays we do this, but because rather than playing on a Sunday, the Skins played on a Monday, everything gets pushed back a little bit. So you got to kick someone off the island. You got to give someone immunity. Before we find out what the listeners decided to do, why don't we make our votes? Again, you'll do this each and every week. It's facebook.com/Grant and Danny. Give us a like while you're there. The way this works is you think about who had the worst game, you send them home. You think about who had the best game, you make sure that you protect them in case they stink up the joint in 7 days in the upcoming matchup. Previously, it was voted that Adrian Peterson had immunity. Josh Doctson had been kicked off the island in week one. We were down already to just 6 players on defense. There are still 7 remaining on offense. So, Alex Smith, Chris Thompson, Paul Richardson, Jamison Crowder, Jordan Reed, and Trent Williams, all available to be booted on offense or get immunity. Quentin Dunbar, DJ Swearinger, Ryan Kerrigan, Zach Brown, Mason Foster, Deron Payne still remain on defense. Danny, who gets immunity?
Immunity for me, Dustin Hopkins. Kicked the hell out of a 50-plus yard field goal in a hostile environment, and when he had a couple opportunities to kick off, he kicked off well. Dustin Hopkins.
Immunity for me, Deron Payne. A sack in a second straight game. Couple tackles for loss. 3
forced
stops overall.
There, yeah.
A big force fumble that if Pernell McPhee just did a normal picking up of a fumble thing, it would have been a turnover. Instead, it wasn't. I don't know what he was trying to do on that play. Deron Payne gets immunity. Thought he was actually really good in a terrible defensive performance. Who am I sending home, you ask? Well, I got plenty of options. Could be Alex Smith, who was terrible. Could be Jordan Reed, who had 1 catch for 21 yards. Wasn't all his fault. Josh Norman is already gone.
He's already gone.
He was voted off last week. Thought about him. So I guess I'll just go with Alex Smith, the starting quarterback.
Alex Smith, the Alex Smith era is over, at least when it comes to Survivor. I thought he was dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. He got hit early, and that disrupted his rhythm and his flow. I can't have that. I just can't have you be that bad. You're paid too much. You're here. You're supposed to be the solution. That game should not be in your repertoire because that's not who you are. You are Captain Checkdown, but you at least got to check it down. You can't be turning it over like that. It can't happen. I can't have that. You're gone.
Dar has closed the voting on Facebook, so let's find out who's going home, who's getting immunity.
Well, it was a landslide, boys. It's not good. Alex Smith got voted off almost unanimously. A closer vote, Dustin Hopkins, a kicker, has immunity next week.
Great sign.
That's good, right?
Dustin Hopkins got immunity.
Dustin Hopkins, the
great
idiot kicker.
That is the first time this has ever happened.
Ever.
Yep.
In the history of Redskin Survivor on Grant and Danny.
Yeah.
He could go 0-for-4 and miss 4 field goals, and Dustin Hopkins is immune.
Remember, there were people trying to vote him out in mass like 2 weeks ago when he had a decent game.
Yeah, he missed one. Yeah.
Poor Dustin Hopkins. Two weeks ago.
Not poor Dustin Hopkins. He's immune.
No, not this week.
He's immune.
He is staying. He's going nowhere. He will be one of the last 12 Redskins standing in Redskins Survivor as the season continues. Wow. Thank you for voting at facebook.com/Grant and Danny. You're going to watch any Caps nights tonight? Should be a fun one.
I want to do a little reliving. I want to do the thing because I'm going to remember the last time they played. I'm going to drink from the cup of sports joy. I don't care what the result is tonight. But I'll get to remember the Stanley Cup Championship and the Vegas Golden Knights, who so kindly came in second for that, to wash away the stank of that New Orleans Monday Night Chumbingas. So I'm gonna dip my toes in Lake Minnetonka, which is the joy of the Washington Capitals winning
the
Stanley Cup.
Just realized, too, that's an 8 o'clock drop of the puck. Mm-hmm. It's a late game tonight, so nationally televised.
Yeah.
Rematch of the Stanley Cup. There's gonna be a lot of those early this season. For the Capitals, who have had just a weird schedule, man. Back-to-back games, and then they had a week off. They have not played since before you and I flew to New Orleans. Think about that.
And then another back-to-back, by the way.
Yes.
I hate the NHL schedule. I say it every year right around this time. The early season NHL schedule is awful. I don't know who's in charge of it. I don't know if they're like the 10th seed in every building they have to go into. They have to work around various concerts and other events. I hate the NHL schedule. They do a terrible job. A terrible job at something that I know is very hard. I can't have this. I can't have back-to-back week and then back-to-back. Space it out one time, please. Figure it out.
You don't have to worry much, by the way, about multitasking tonight. You don't have any NFL football on a Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have any baseball. League Championship Series play begins on Friday night. NLCS Dodgers-Brewers for Milwaukee. And then on Saturday, ALCS Game 1 in primetime, Astros-Red Sox in
Boston.
That's
a good one right there, buddy.
Your boy's going to Boston and Houston. I fly out on Friday afternoon.
Nice. What's
that
first?
Was such a delayed
reaction.
No,
it's because I was thinking about that. So you got it. So Boston for two, right?
So, yeah, so I fly to Boston on Friday. I will do Saturday and Sunday broadcasts. Watch Redskins Panthers from a sports bar near Fenway Park. So send me one if you got it. So I'll do that Saturday, Sunday. Watch the big Georgia LSU game, and then I'm on the air each night doing the game. And then Monday I fly out and fly straight to Houston.
Fly to Houston. Got
it. I'll be doing show Monday from Boston, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from Houston.
Dude, so much past. And see if you can figure out how to do radio. Get guidance from those guys.
I will
up there because they do it so well. They never have anything to talk about.
They're very good at radio. If you missed Dante Stallworth, he was great. Andy Benoit was awesome. Any part of our show today, you can go to thefandc.com or grantanddanny.com/audience.
TDBW up next, 4.5 hours. Alex Bregman's swing plan. How does he do it? Chad knows. He'll tell you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.